Can you believe it's been 52 years since Roe versus Wade was passed? I can hardly believe that. Of course, Roe versus Wade was overturned in 2022. But now here we are. We're facing our whole culture has transformed because seven justices forced this upon the American people who were very pro-life at the time. Only one state had legalized abortion. I just want to explain that to you before we talk today about this being National Sanctity of Life Month and National Sanctity of Life Sunday is coming up. As I talk to you, maybe when you hear this, we'll be past that. But it's time for us to revisit this issue of life. I revisit it every time I talk to you with talking to you about preborn and the beauty of life. But there are other things to be said. There is a vast universe of information and reasons why abortion is bad. It's bad for our country. It's bad for individuals. It's bad for the husbands who encourage the wives, the boyfriends who do the same. There's damage that is done when you start, have a callous in your heart for the sanctity of life, for babies, for heaven's sake, the most innocent in our culture. We're going to have a great discussion today with one of the really brightest bulbs in the pro-life movement, Ryan Bomberger. I met Ryan a few years ago. He's not as young as he was then, but he's still young. He's a mixed race. He has a very interesting story. And he has he speaks all over the country and also universities about moral issues and certainly the sanctity of life. So we're going to spend some time with him. There's some news that just came out, at least in real time, with me speaking to you today. But under the Trump administration, in the first administration in 2016, the Health and Human Services did a number of incredible rules. Now, we grouse that the rules of agencies now, under Obama, then under Biden, have these onerous rules they make that are kind of the same as law, and they place a burden on farmers, on landowners, environmental rules, abortion rules, all kinds of things that actually have the same kind of power as law. Shouldn't be that way, but that's kind of the way it has it. And in the first administration, President Trump, they admitted, they went through all of the agencies and they systematically removed tons of those rules. But they instated some rules that were wonderful. Roger Severino was the head of Health and Human Services, at least a portion of it. And Roger was our guest frequently then, and he drove a lot of this. But President Trump was all in. And so those were eliminated. I think when President Biden came into office, they were immediately eradicated. And now Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri, is urging President Trump to re-implement them, to defund Planned Parenthood and undo the regulations, the abortion onerous regulations that Biden's White House and administration put in place. So that's a good thing, and that's kind of newsworthy. So I wanted you to know that's taking place. We'll see how the White House responds to it. We're kind of in uncertain waters right now. And actually, Ryan and I will get into that just a little bit. This is Sandy Rios, and you're listening to Sandy Rios 24/7. And you know you can call us at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. You can write us, and I hope that you will, at sandy@afr.net, sandy@afr.net. You can listen to us on any podcast platform. afr.net is our home base. You can also go to my website, sandyrios.com, and listen. But Spotify, you know, Amazon, wherever you like to listen, you can listen. Also, you'll find us on all of the social media sites, Sandy Rios 24/7. Well, this is Sanctity of Life Month. And actually, this coming Sunday, if you're listening in real time, this is January the 13th, is going to be Sanctity of Life Sunday. And I know hopefully a lot of your pastors and churches will raise up the importance of the value of human life. With that in mind, we honor now the over 66 million babies whose lives have been tragically ended through abortion since Roe versus Wade. And sadly, since Roe was overturned, babies' lives are at an even greater risk because the abortion pill accounts for over 60% of abortions, making this tragedy available 24/7. But in the midst of this darkness, there is a light that shines. Preborn has rescued over 300,000 babies, with your help, I might add. And every day, on average, they rescue 200-plus babies. When a woman considering abortion hears her baby's heartbeat and sees her precious baby on ultrasound, her baby's chance of life is doubled. Preborn shares free heartbeats and God's love for mother and child, and they need our help. For just $28, the cost of a dinner for most of us, you can sponsor an ultrasound to introduce a mother to her baby for the very first time. And by the way, 100% of your donation goes towards saving the babies. If you want to help, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. All right, fasten your seatbelt. This is a time when we're going to discuss life, but in a fresh way. Trust me, you will not be bored in my discussion with Ryan Bomberger on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Being on the right side of history isn't always popular or easy.
Through the third trimester, the bill has no limit.
Following the abortion procedure, the babies were born
alive.
Pregnancy
resource centers are on high alert.
Pro-abortionists have firebombed a pregnancy center.
When culture is spreading lies about the dignity of life, and it seems like we're in a losing battle, we might feel like giving up. But we won't. This is why we march. Because lives like these turn into these. And that is why we march.
Only one march has happened every year since 1974. And in just a few hours, thousands of marchers will fill the streets of Washington, D.C.
We're here to march and to show solidarity for the baby in the womb.
We march to be a voice for the voiceless.
We march to end abortion.
We march for both mom and baby.
I just want every single baby to be valued and every single woman to know that she is important and she should be loved.
They're partaking in the annual March for Life, the largest human rights display in the world.
Because every single life deserves a chance. That is what real human flourishing looks like. And that is why we march.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. And of course, this is the National Sanctity of Life Week. Sunday is National Sanctity of Life Sunday. By the time you hear this, we may be past a little bit of that, but this is an issue that's central, I think, to many of us who are followers of Christ, and I certainly am. This is how I got involved in politics, was through the life issue. I'll save that story for another time. But I think, you know, sometimes the abortion issue can become mundane and common. We use the word, we talk about the numbers, the preciousness of babies' lives, but even as the things, words fall off our lips, they're not connecting with the reality. I want to remind you that the birth of every child is an astounding miracle of God, an incredible event. And the death, the killing of each unborn child is the same. God knows the number of hairs on our head. He certainly knows every baby whose innocent life is taken. This is a serious problem, and I want to rekindle that love for life in all of us. I try to do that every day, but certainly on the abortion issue, we're going to focus on that today. And a few years ago, I met a young man who I just enjoyed so much, and now he's a famous person. And he's doing all kinds of great work in a lot of areas. But I met him over the issue of life. His name is Ryan Bomberger. He's an Emmy award-winning creative professional. He's an international public speaker, a columnist, and what he calls a factivist. He's an author of a book called Not Equal, Civil Rights Gone Wrong, and some illustrated children's books, He Is He and She Is She. And he's the co-founder, along with his wife Bethany, of what's called the Radiance Foundation. We're going to talk about that, but we're also going to talk about the issue of life. And Ryan joins me this morning. Ryan, thanks so much. It's nice to connect with you after a bit.
Yes, it's great to be here with you, Sandy.
So, Ryan, let's talk just for a second about, well, first of all, what did you win the Emmy Award for?
For broadcast media design for a missionary TV series called OMX. So I've spent years and years working in the ad agency world, and sometimes you get awards for some of the stuff, but honestly, the most rewarding stuff is the work that my wife and I do now through the Radiance Foundation. But that was all training ground, so I thank God for all of it.
Yeah, no, I get that. I mean, I've gotten awards, and that sometimes you're known for things that you forget because they're not the major thing in your life, but it's a great gift to you. I'm glad that's on your resume. So at this time, I know that you're an author, a columnist, public speaker. You spoke at the National Right to Life March for Life, and I did too. I've done that, of course, before. But I want to know, just from your perspective, what is the most exciting speaking opportunity you ever had?
I used to work as I was a youth leader for years and years. I love working with kids. So put me in any middle school or high school and being able to just impart to them that God loves them, that he has purpose and just an intentional destiny for all of them, that for me is the most special. 2 months ago, I spoke at a Christian school in Georgia. That was probably Hebron Academy. Actually, just for me, bigger than, you know, the stadiums or the arenas where there's 35,000 or 40,000 or some of these larger events, that to me is the most rewarding because these kids are so inundated with so much disinformation, so many lies, and just allowing God to use me to speak to them. And when they come up afterward and say, I never knew that, I've never thought along those lines, thank you so much for saying something I've never heard before. That, to me, is the best.
Well, let me put that in contrast with, you have spoken at Harvard, Princeton, Columbia Law, University of Notre Dame, Ireland's Trinity College, lots of other places, to let people know that you have spoken in some very large venues. So that makes your answer even more profound, Ryan. I have to say, I feel the same way. I used to be a singer, and I sang in a lot of big venues, had a lot of great opportunities. But the thing that thrilled me the most were some of the prison ministry that I did. I remember singing at a high school prom with the band a long time ago. And I had a chance to share the gospel. And that was, I'll never forget that. That was thrilling. So I understand what you're saying. It sounds crazy, I'm sure, to other people. But that's the thing that made my heart beat fast as well. Because we are, at our hearts, I think you're an evangelist. And so am I. An evangelist for truth. Yeah. So, all right. So you have told me your story before. And you've got just a sentence here about it in your bio. But I think before we talk about, jump into this whole issue of life, people would like to know a little bit more about your background, Ryan. I know you were raised in a home. You were an adoptive child. You were one of 10. Did they adopt 10 children, all 10 of you?
All 10. I was the first one.
that went well then. All right, good.
It went really well. And then a new child added to the family every year. But I grew up in an amazing Christian family in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Henry and Andrea Bomberger, my parents. And I was the first adopted. And many of my siblings are the exceptions that even sometimes some Christians, some pro-lifers have a hard time embracing. But the reality is my parents embraced all of us, didn't fixate on how we came to be, just focused on who God meant for us to be. And so I grew up in a family of 15. So they had three homemade ones, or whatever you want to call them, three of the biological ones, and then adopted 10 of us. And so that's my origin story. I had a courageous birth mom who, despite experiencing the horrific violence of rape, did not make me a victim of the violence of abortion. And for that, I'm forever grateful. And that's why when anybody asks me, why do you care about this issue? Well, one, I'm human. That's why I care. But two, it's my story. I was one of the most marginalized amongst the marginalized.
You know, I forgot that part of your story, Ryan, that you are a child born from rape. And I'm actually glad it gives us an opportunity to kind of talk about that for a second. Because I think that even Christians are sympathetic to the notion of abortion and cases of rape. You know, rather than me jumping in to make the case, could you make the case to them? I mean, your life is the case for that, for not aborting because of rape. But give the deeper reason why I'm guessing that you think it's not okay to have an abortion because you've been raped.
Well, as a society, we think the natural follow-up to such an act of violence is abortion. We think, you know, oh, well, it heals. It doesn't correct anything. It doesn't punish the rapist. That's part of what's lost in this conversation. The rapist is the one who should be punished, not the woman and not the unborn child. And abortion itself, the act itself, has deep physiological and emotional ramifications. And it doesn't matter what the reason for the elective abortion, it still profoundly impacts the woman. And so you've got an industry that preys on women's fears, preys on their confusion in the moment, and profits from that. And so as Christians, we should be thinking, wait a minute, what is compassion? Is it the abortion huckster who's just selling the abortion and then shoving the woman out the door? Or is it, for instance, the pregnancy center who will walk with that woman through that journey? Many of these centers are run by women who've experienced things like rape, who have been women who experience unplanned pregnancies in different circumstances and who know that pain, who know that confusion. And so as Christians, we need to be thinking, okay, we serve a God of life. How can we speak life and bring life into this situation?
Well, I think, speaking as a woman, rape, of course, is traumatic. It leaves a scar for life. So I don't think there's any better way of healing that scar than giving birth to a baby. And I think of the people that I know, I don't have a catalog full of people like this, but of the people I have spoken to who have been raped and then did give birth, there's a healing effect because, and then often it's not, maybe not the best thing to keep the baby if you're married or whatever. As your mother decided to adopt you, it was better for you. And obviously, she wanted you to have a really good life, Ryan. So that I believe that's a healing thing. If you choose to keep that baby, it heals you. It's not a punishment. I have a friend, you don't know, but I have a friend. But let me just say that she was involved in the pro-life movement. And she was speaking at a rally. And somehow during that rally in a major city, afterwards, somehow in that crowd, she was pulled aside and raped. And she was a different race than the man who raped her. And her husband was a different, it's very confusing, Ryan. It's a lot of different races involved. And I don't want to say. So let's just say that the baby then was going to be mixed race and her husband was of a different race than she was. So it was very complicated. So she chose not to keep that baby. Now that was very hard for her, but it's a courageous act and it brings healing. And I think she would say it did the same thing for her. So I'm glad you gave us a chance to actually talk about that. But okay, so, you know, go ahead, sir. I'm interrupting you because I want to hear from you.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was just going to say that I've met hundreds of rape survivors, those who chose the wonderful loving plan of adoption, those who've chosen to parent, and those who are post-abortive. And I will tell you, what I was surprised by was that the common thread with all these women that I've met in hundreds of events where I've spoken at, the common thread was that the child is the only redemptive part of that. And you obviously alluded to that. One of the most powerful stories I've heard is from Nancy Kelly, a woman who became mother through the violence of rape. And I heard her on the steps of the Capitol in Montgomery, Alabama. And when she said, I received healing because of the twins that I conceived in rape. They brought me healing. And I, you know, as someone conceived in rape, to hear a mother who became a mother, a woman became a mother by such violence, saying those words, it just affirms the fact that there are alternatives to the violence of abortion. And that women, even in those circumstances, still crave, still need wholeness and healing, and that does not come by way of abortion.
No, absolutely. It just leaves another scar. So you've been raped and now you go through an abortion. And for our country, you know, for our culture now, that's just clean and neat. Now it's over. Both things are over. They never understand, Ryan, the emotional scars, the deep emotional scars in women from abortion. They just don't get it. Some of us do, but not enough. And I want to get into that in just a second. But I want to ask you, before we go into the actual subject more, of all the things you could have been interested in, and you do write about a lot of things. Actually, you just wrote about Mark Zuckerberg and his famous statement about how he's going to, you know, allow free speech on that platform. And we can talk about that if we get to it. But yeah, you write about a lot of different things. You address the transgender issue. You've written, you know, these books, as I said, about children. And I should repeat those names. It's He Is He and She Is She. Those are two books. And I guess they're available at theradiancefoundation.org, right?
They go to radiancefoundation.org, or it might be easier just to go to radiance.life. And for now, they're still on Amazon, so that might be the easier way, but radiance.life is how you can get those books. By the way, my wife is the co-author and the reason for our passion for children's books. That's her whole forte.
Cool. Very cool. Okay, so of all the things, you know, there's a lot of things to be concerned about. You said you were raised in a Christian family, so now... I'm sorry, I just have to ask you this. This interview might take hours, the way I'm going here. But when you know that just being raised in a Christian family, people that love God, doesn't make you that. They don't stamp that on you at birth or when you come to them adopted as a baby. You have to make that decision. So, Ryan, was that an easy decision? Did you fall easily into following Christ? Or at what point did you really commit yourself?
Well, I would say as a young child, absolutely, I embraced my parents' faith, but it was when I was 13, a pivotal moment at a youth camp with an evangelist who was from Western Europe, and it was that moment where I knew specifically that I'd given my life to Christ. I had been struggling with certain things, and of course, then I fell back into some things back in my 20s and had to make intentional decisions. I was fighting severe depression, and I needed rescue, and it really was a supernatural rescue from that depression, which then allowed me to finally connect with the love of my life, Bethany Bomberger, my wife, and to be able to be a whole man, the kind of man that she needed as a husband. And so there were a lot of deep struggles, but thanks to God, overcame all of those before I got married, so I didn't have to struggle through them during marriage.
You know, somebody said to me once, something I'll never forget, perhaps everybody knows this, I didn't know it at the time, but he basically said to me, because I had some hard times in my life, and he said, you know, Sandy, who God would use much must suffer much. And I think that's true, Ryan. And so he was preparing you for what you've been doing this past however many years you've been doing it. But why the abortion issue? Well, I mean, that's how I met you. You were just fires blazing over that issue. Why that issue?
It's the most fundamental issue. I mean, life is the first right. Without it, nothing else matters. And coming from the background that I have, and also now being married with four children, two of whom were adopted, it's hard not to think about that. Without that fundamental right, all these other rights, people want to talk about poverty, that's fine, but an impoverished kid doesn't need to eat if he or she has already been aborted. I mean, there are all these issues follow life. And what I found, as the factivist that I am, I would get frustrated in certain venues when I would hear a pro-life, pro-abortion debate, and there were oftentimes there were some instances where the pro-life debater was not willing to go into the issues of fatherlessness, not willing to go into the issues of poverty, not willing to go into some of these extraneous issues, which are kind of inextricably tied together. And I felt like, you know what, I want to be able to answer those issues, but then come back to the core issue, which is life. But it felt like, how could I not fight for those who have stories like mine? How could I not fight for all of marginalized, the most vulnerable lives? And so that's how we started the Radiance Foundation back in 2009, that would be our core issue. But then we would talk about family, fatherlessness, racism. I'm half white, half, actually, I'm white, black, Asian, Spanish, Portuguese. I'm a mixture of everything. I found I'm more Native American than Elizabeth Warren. So I'm all these things. And so race is matters to us because it matters to God. He created this diversity, but he never created it for us to separate ourselves by it.
Right.
And so there are these other issues that to me are so tied, but I will always come back to that core issue because without life, there's no bodily autonomy. If you want to talk about my body, my choice, well, you have no body if you have no life. So this is why as a creative, we love trying to figure out, okay, how can we message on these things? How can we say things differently?
Yes.
You know, Bethany wrote this book, Pro-Life Kids. It's a children's book to teach children what it means to be pro-life and how God creates us all in all of our different ages and stages with undeniable purpose. So it's something that we will always be the most passionate about in everything that we do at the Radiance Foundation.
Well, here, that makes a great transition because we are, honestly, Ryan, you know, I've been at this for a long time. And what a sea change we have experienced. I would just say, briefly, I would just tell you, Roe versus Wade passed in 1973. The country was so pro-life, that was a shocker. And I'm going to get into that in a later broadcast. But then you move into the 80s and... pro-death, pro-abortion forces had made such gains in culture, including in first ladies, a series of first ladies who were all pro-abortion, it was very difficult. It was like, we were like the deplorables in the 80s, those people that were pro-life. And then we had this huge, we understood the pro-life movement that we had to make the case differently. And we started developing good arguments that were true, not manipulative. And we gained some ground just by persuasion and showing people pictures of the baby and the womb and all of that. So much so that then all Republican politicians, you know, suddenly were pro-life, even if they really didn't mean it or didn't want to pay a price for it. So that was the thing to be. Every president had to be pro-life. Every Republican presidential candidate had to be pro-life. Every congressman, every senator had to be pro-life. There are some exceptions, but not many. Well, now the pendulum is swinging back and actually ferociously. I see, you know, the rabid love of abortion has just come out of the pit of hell, and we're in a different place. And I want to ask you, Ryan, why you think that is? How would you analyze, you know, because you're younger than I am, so what's your perspective on how this has changed so much and why?
I think, first and foremost, the church has been so apathetic about the issue of abortion. You know, we hear and we get disgusted when we see denominations coming out, you know, a century later or decades and decades later after racial injustice and apologizing for inaction. Well, how many decades is it going to take for churches to then write these letters and apologize, these official statements, apologizing for their inaction with the injustice of abortion? We live in such a culture of convenience and ease, and it's all out of sight, out of mind. But to hear Christians increasingly justifying the violence of abortion blows my mind. I mean, God hates the shedding of innocent blood. I mean, there's no question about that. He is the author of life, and we don't have the right to take that life. But yet so many Christians are at ease with the violence of abortion. They will, and we see this in the states where there were abortion mandates, ballot initiatives, where yes, the vast majority in many states voted, and a lot of those people were Christians, trying to justify what is unjustifiable. And so I actually do blame the church at large for being unwilling. I mean, they will step into the arena of illegal immigration. They'll step into the arena of Black Lives Matter. They'll step in the arena, you know, fill in the blank. But when it comes to abortion, so many of them are completely silent. They are MIA. And that's why we have the culture. When you look at Gallup polling, I mean, 41% now, you know, ascribe to the label of pro-life and 54% pro-choice, which of course we know is pro-abortion, pro-death. That is in large part because the church is unwilling to do the persuasion that they need to do. I work with a number of churches. In fact, I'm speaking at a church coming up here soon that has launched its own pregnancy center, and that church is so incredibly pro-life. I love it. It's in Lubbock, Texas. I can just say it's Trinity Church, and I love the fact that they are all in And this is what every Christian church should be doing. And we wouldn't see what we're seeing now. And of course, the GOP, I mean, they're fearing what the left is cheering. We saw the total retreat from their solid pro-life platform, the RNC just bowing, trying to be Democrat light. That doesn't do anybody any good, certainly not the most vulnerable, not women facing unplanned pregnancies. So between the church and a political party that has tucked tail and run, or at least I should say its leadership, because there are many Republican legislators and lawmakers who are good men and women who are standing firm in their pro-life convictions. But the leadership, the RNC in particular, has decided that it's going to, bend to the mob and be pro-abortion light, I guess.
Yes.
And we saw that in Trump and Vance.
Right. Totally. I hear that. I think I agree with you, Ryan. I'm this kind of a thing that I pound constantly is the churches, you know, God is at work in this world right now, but I don't think it's in the churches. I see his power manifested so many places. I see, you know, people that are not necessarily, they're not ministers like Charlie Kirk and even Elon Musk, who is not a Christian, talks about Christian principles more than some Christians, you know,
right.
Controversial principles. And I think of Jordan Peterson, same thing. I don't think he's crossed the line yet. I don't know. But he talks about it. He makes the case for or against it. And so it's on the table that, you know, God is manifesting truth in other ways. And I think people are following it. But the thing that I think, my personal opinion, and I'll say this to you and see what you think about it. I think the reason that the Republican Party caved, and we'll talk about particulars in a second, and President Trump has sort of hedged, I would say hedged, is because pro-life leaders, first of all, Christians, as you said, churches, have been silent. They have failed in their duty to be salt and light on this issue. That's not all churches, but most of them. And the second thing is I think pro-life organizations and pro-life leaders have also failed. I'm sure there are exceptions, but for the most part, they become part of the system. And I think President Trump was just left out there on his own. And we don't know where he is spiritually. I think he's certainly close if he's not a believer, but he's not like steeped in scripture. He's not like got a history of serving God. He needs people speaking in his ear who have a passion about this. And I'm not sure that happened, Ryan. Okay, so pushback. What, you think that's right? Do you see it that way?
I would say I definitely would not blame pro-life leaders. I work with many of these national leaders, and they have, you know, SBA List, for instance, has been a great resource in helping direct the first Trump administration, which is why we saw so many incredible pro-life policies, and many other organizations like Students for Life, Live Action, and whatnot. So there is great persuasion on their part. I think it was kind of a shock, I'll tell you, because I'm in these meetings with my fellow pro-life leaders, colleagues, and friends, that kind of taken by surprise by Trump's reversal on some of these things, particularly when he was announcing, you know, his support for IVF without the consideration that what's the difference between killing an embryo in an abortion mill and killing an embryo in an IVF clinic. Many people don't even understand the process that actually requires the killing of many embryos. But then it went to his talking about how Florida went too far with their Heartbeat Act. And so some of the pro-life movement, I would say, was taken by surprise by this new direction. J.D. Vance's retreat from his firm pro-life convictions. And so I know there are times when where there's the willingness from some pro-life groups on exceptions, but that's when all else I feel is exhausted because I'm in all these meetings. I'm in so much of the strategy, you know, conversations, and how do we move forward? In fact, it was really hard to move forward with this last election, but you had the choice between hardcore pro-abortion, Kamala Harris, and is this just expedience, pro-abortion light, Trump? You know, and obviously there was one choice that was far better than the other, but I cannot pin this on some of these amazing pro-life organizations that are really fighting tooth and nail for the protection of human life. Are there mistakes? Yes, because everybody makes mistakes. Definitely mistakes along the way. But I don't know. It's because then you have some pro-life individuals and some maybe some church leaders who are saying, well, look, these pro-life groups are aligning with Trump, even though he has admitted that he's pro-abortion. Look, see, they only care about the paycheck and they only care about this and that. And I would never say that, because there are so many incredible people who put their lives on the line, their financial lives on the line, I should say, the reputations on the line, in order to fight for the most vulnerable. And so I do place it more on an RNC that was clearly overtaken and led by some who espouse having a, like Marsha Blackburn, a profound pro-life worldview, and then all of a sudden rammed the new GOP platform down delegates' throats and didn't give them time to consider, vote, or whatever. It's just, I think it was far more political than it was any kind of intention on the pro-life movement side. No, that's my pushback.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the whole way that happened with the RNC was disgraceful. And I think, you know, we can lay it at the feet of the fact that the leaders of the campaign and the people in charge are not pro-life. They're not one of us. They just aren't.
Right.
And they were the ones given the power to do what they did. I would push back with you, but I don't want to go into this. There's no need to belabor this, but you know I've been a leader myself. I was president of CWA. So my history with the pro-life movement is a little different. And I started in pro-life movement before I went to Washington for that. So I know there are some incredible leaders in that, because they were some of my best friends. But what I saw later on, Ryan, without going into detail, because why would we? It's just that they were not willing to lay it on the line, and I'm not sure they are now. When they could have made hard choices and laid it on the line against the administration at the time, they didn't do it. They could have helped defund Planned Parenthood, and they didn't do it. Kind of like Marsha Blackburn, when the push came to shove, they were not willing to fight. And I would say, especially, I would tell you the time about it, and then we can move on. David Del Leiden, when he came out with his tapes of the Planned Parenthood, his undercover tapes, which were just appalling, and Americans were just in shock. We had a chance to defund Planned Parenthood, and they would not go to the mat on that because the Republican Party didn't want to shut down the government. So I was in those meetings, and so I'll never forget that, and the disappointment, because it was a crossroads, and they did not pass that test. Now, there was a couple of exceptions, and, you know, I don't want to name names, so let's don't even bother with that. But that's where I'm coming from. And so I do place – yeah,
right.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, your history is deeper than mine, and your knowledge of some of these inner workings, I think, is far wider than mine. And I hate politics. I honestly do.
I do, too. I do, too.
But,
I do, too. I do it all the time. I talk about it all the time. That's the world in which I live, but I don't like it. Yeah. You know, the thing of it is, Ryan, God is into new beginnings, so there's always a chance, and that's not a condemnation that will last forever. It's a cloud. It needs to be overcome, just like the church's cloud of silence needs to be overcome. Stop it.
Yes.
Just start speaking up. Take it on. Take on the mantle of righteousness again, not this sleepy, lazy luxury of Sunday morning church and reading the Bible, which is a luxury for sure. And Lord, you know, I don't mean the way it sounded, but by that you're doing all you need to do, and it isn't all you need to do. You have to act on it. Hearing the word means action, James tells us. But now I'm preaching. Okay, so, but this is something you'll know a lot about, Ryan. One of the things we've had this revolution in, from my perspective, is our college kids and young people. Now it's younger people. You know, they're just indoctrinated. As you're talking to them, do you, on the issue of abortion, how do you approach making the case for life to younger kids? I don't know, pick an age, whatever age you want. Are you having success when you talk to them, and what is that thing that you think is most persuasive?
My own story. In fact, I first started sharing it back in eighth grade in public school, and I saw the way my teacher responded. I saw the way some of my friends responded. It was the first time I shared how I came to be, and it was weeks after I learned actually how I came to be. I was 13 years old, and I had apparently a fantasized version of how it all came down, but I was informed in a conversation with my mom that it wasn't quite like that. And so since eighth grade, I realized that my story itself is very disarming for people who want to protest and fight and challenge. It's really hard. So when I go on, you know, you mentioned Harvard and Princeton and University of Notre Dame, Penn State, I mean, all these colleges where students come in and they want to protest, who's this guy and why does he matter? And then I share my story. It's unbelievable how many students come up, because it is, that's why I say I'm the 1% that's used 100% of the time to justify abortion. Every time, it always has to do with rape. In fact, if you remember the DNC's convention, they brought up Hadley Duvall, a beautiful young lady who sadly went through sexual abuse, but they have been abusing her by allowing her to use her story of being raped to push and promote abortion. What they don't tell you is she actually never had an abortion. She had tragically had a miscarriage, but she's being used by the Democratic Party. So many of these young people don't understand how they are being manipulated emotionally into embracing something that is so violent. And so when I get to share my story, it's really amazing to see the reaction when I talk about the humanity of the child, when I talk about circumstances, like even our adoption. I talk about, you know, my siblings. I don't give their personal stories necessarily, because I don't name my siblings while I share some of the background stories in our family. But so many of us would have been written off. So many of us are the exceptions cases, which define this whole argument, because they're the ones they always go to. And it's amazing the light that goes on when young people come up and say, I had never met someone who was conceived in rape. I never knew about this circumstance. I didn't know that there was, you know, hospice, you know. I didn't know that there were options for people who had a fatal diagnosis for their unborn baby, and there were different ways of dealing with that rather than aborting the child. So young people get so little. I mean, we have access to more information than ever before in human history, but they get so little. They get so little in their public school. They get so little in their churches. They get so little in Christian schools even. And certainly it gets so little through social media. But that's why I love the opportunity that God gives me to be able to break through to them. And honestly, personal stories are still the best. You can give all the facts, and I'm a factivist. I will, you know, intertwine the facts with the stories, but the personal stories are the most compelling. And that's why I'm going to keep telling my story. For me, it never gets old, because God uses it to break through so many times.
Oh, that's great. And I, you know what? Isn't it true? We don't need manipulative tactics to reach people. And I was just thinking, right. I've often thought, you know, with all this transgenderism and also starting with fake marriage, gay marriage, the biggest story or most impactful thing on the value of marriage is to watch an intact family lovingly interact. A man and a woman and their children. You don't see it enough, Ryan. But when you see it out in public, it's like a wonder of the world. And it speaks more, it really is. It speaks more highly, you know, of God's design than just about anything. And in the same way, I Preborn is a sponsor of the show, and so we talk about this, of course, every day that I'm doing a show. And they use, you know, these detailed ultrasounds. Just the truth, the deep truth of God, the picture of that baby, the picture of it sucking its thumb, its little parts, special parts that God gave it. You know, this is the power of God to change people's minds. Your story, the picture of a family, the photo of a baby in utero. We don't have to make up things. We don't have to devise or scheme, because these things are powerful truths. And so... All right, so here we are on the, 52nd anniversary of the passage of Roe versus Wade. Of course, it's been overturned, but nevertheless, the effect on our country has just been onerous, really and truly. And in closing, Ryan, what just any final words from you as we approach now this 52nd year? As you and I are talking, Sanctity of Life Sunday is coming up. I want to again remind people that the March for Life is in D.C. on January 24th, which I did not say earlier, but... I love, love, love that march. Love it. I used to go every year. I used to make my staff get away from their desks and come join me, and we would march it every year. And I marched it other years that I wasn't there. So I just can't say enough about all of you going to the March for Life on January 24th in Washington, D.C. If you're able, it's worth the drive. If you have a long drive, just plan, make it a vacation or, you know, a little mini weekend trip. Or if you're nearby, for sure, go. You must experience this. It's just amazing. So, Ryan, any closing thoughts for people about this very important issue of life or about the march?
Well, I do love March for Life. Jeannie Mancini has been a good friend. She's the one who's the president of the March for Life, and I love their stand. They, you know, it goes back to their founder, Nellie Gray. No compromise, no exceptions, no compromise, and they've invited me to speak at many of their events. It is an awesome reminder of the fact that there are people fighting for life all across the country. We can't give up hope. It's so easy to be discouraged because you hear the news, and it truly is so much fake news out there. The only news that we really should be immersing ourselves in, of course, is the good news, because we're reminded that God is our hope, that politicians are not our hope, that our next-door neighbor is not our hope. And quite honestly, even our mothers and our fathers or our siblings are not our hope. Our ultimate hope is in Christ. And honestly, the victories that come out of nowhere. Look at Trump's first administration. Whoever thought that would have happened? And now we have a second time. Who knows what God will do through his people? And so I just want to encourage people. I know it feels like a forever fight, but, you know, it took a long time for slavery to be abolished. And as somebody with brown skin, I'm glad that abolitionists never gave up. But the human person is worth that fight. And that human person becomes a person at the moment of conception. So from the moment of conception onward, we should be fighting for that life and for that God-given purpose of every individual. And so go and go to the March for Life in D.C. Go to March for Life in your city or in your state. Go to your local pregnancy center and find out how God is using them to transform and save lives. You want to find out how that's happening in real time? Go to your local pregnancy center. Go to pregnancycenters.org, by the way. That's the best way to find your local pregnancy center. There is so much hope. And for those who feel like, you know, well, the political landscape isn't right, well, it's never right. But God always is. And he is far more relentless than the devil. And he never gives up, and he never stops just working in such incredible, unexpected ways. So I just want to encourage people, have hope and be that hope.
I love it. Okay, Ryan Bomberger, you just gave us a course on how powerful it is when the passion on an issue, the spiritual passion, is combined with the great gifts that God has given you. And so thank you for that great conclusion. Ryan, you can reach, see anything he's writing, find out more about him at the RadianceFoundation.org, the books he's written, the materials that he and his wife Bethany have produced for kids and on pro-life and on transgenderism. Just go to the RadianceFoundation.org and you can find out about all of that. Ryan, thanks for your time this morning. God bless you and your family. And hopefully we'll talk, you know, sooner than we did this time, more than once every 3 years or so. Okay?
Sounds great. God bless.
Okay, thank you, Ryan. Same to you. All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Well, this is Sanctity of Life Week, and many of you will be thinking about that. Your attention will be drawn to it, and I hope that's the case. There are so many other avenues on the abortion issue. I don't want it to become cliche, and yet I think in many circles it has. You know, this many babies, abortion, like cliche words, which are not cliche. That represents death of an individual baby that God crafted. It is a tragedy and continues to be. And if you'd like to give in a bigger way than the $28 that one ultrasound costs, a leadership gift, which is tax deductible of $5,000, will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours. And you can probably count on rescuing about 200 babies. So all you have to do is go to, if you can afford that, go to preborn.com/Sandy and make that very special donation in honor of those babies that have been killed. We just have to stop this, don't we? We know that God does not lose count. He knows the number of hairs on our head, and he certainly knows every baby that's aborted. And if we can do something to stop it, I think we should, don't you? Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios, back with you. I wanted to play that. That's a song that's featured on Ryan's website, Radiance Foundation. It's really beautiful. You're stronger than you ever knew, but they're not talking about your own personal strength. Like I always complain about after these tragedies, you know, we're Boston strong. We're Pennsylvania strong. We're whatever you fill in the town, the location. I've always resisted that because, no, really, we are not individually strong at all. We're pretty wretched. But that song is about God's strength unleashed in us. And it's true. There are things that you can do that you never thought you could do with God's help. With man, it is impossible. But with God, all things are possible. And I'm addressing that to those of you who may be in a troubled place right now. Maybe some of you are pregnant and not married, or, you know, a teenager or not pregnant, not married. And maybe you have grandchildren in that situation or children in that situation. And I just think you, when it comes to doing what's right, like making the choice, doing it God's way to keep a baby, to put yourself through that, Mary certainly put herself through that. She could have done something differently, but she accepted. She was a virgin birth. I get that, but she still had to go through the disgrace of her culture. And so she embraced that for a higher purpose. And I would just say that you can embrace a lot of things that you think you can't stand, that you think you can't bear, in order to do, just obey, obedience, yielding to God on what's right, against the current, against the culture. You can do it. You're stronger than you think you are with God's help. And with that, we're done for today. I hope you enjoyed today's show. You know that you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on any, you know, I don't know, social media platform, all of them, pretty much, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Telegram, all of them. I can't even remember all of them, so, but we're there, and we have a presence. And also, you can listen to the podcast on any podcast platform. Now, our home base is AFR.net. That's AmericanFamilyRadio.net. You can listen there. You can also listen on Spotify and Amazon and all of those. And you can, an easy way to listen is to go to my website, sandyrios.com, and that's actually a pretty simple way to listen. I would just put a caution. It's still hard if you have a Samsung or an Android phone. It's hard to, the AFR app drops after just a few minutes. And some of you have said to me in church and other places that it, you listen for a minute or so and then it drops. And there's something in your phone that has to be changed to make that stay. It's too hard to explain over the air, but I'm just telling you, that's if you're having that problem, you might want to listen. AFR.net is not the app, or you might want to go to one of the podcast platforms and that will solve that problem. Well, I want to thank our sponsor, Timothy Plan, because they let you put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy, or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you. Thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.